Good morning. So last time we talked about average memory access time. Morrissey mentioned that this was sort of how we would say how good is a cache for a processor by saying when the processor tries to load or store something, how long is that actually going to take it? We also looked at how this affected multi-level cache, and this gave us a good explanation for what is the big benefit of having a second level or third level cache. Saw that sort of in this formula really affected that miss penalty term, and was a convenient way of doing it, which had a big effect on our overall average access time. And generally we talked about, there's a lot of cache design decisions that hardware designers can make, and we can look at this formula to say, this decision is going to affect hit time and hit rate, and we can look at those different terms of the formula, hit time, hit rate, miss penalty, and consider what changes we can make to affect them to achieve our desired performance. Now, when we're talking about hit rate in particular, there's a lot of changes we can make which affect hit rate positively, but a lot of them only work for certain programs. There's some things about some programs where they're more sensitive to some attributes of the cache than others. And so to sort of tease that out, something that's helpful to do is kind of categorize cache misses, the cases where we don't have hits, and we have this common categorization of categorizing them as compulsory or cold misses. And this meant misses where, we were accessing a block for the first time, and that's called compulsory because with our naive cache design, it has to be a miss. We have to bring it in. Now, we learned that, we don't actually have to give up and say, it's a compulsory miss, I can't do anything about it. We have things we can do. And one thing that real processors do was this idea of prefetching that will say, I don't have to wait for you to access it. I can guess that you're going to access it. And this works with some types of accesses where we have this nice pattern, if we're accessing all the elements of an array, or we're running code, we'll see consecutive accesses. We can predict what's going to be accessed next. Also, sort of this notion of a compulsory miss kind of assumes we have a fixed block size. We could also twiddle the block size a little bit to adjust the number of compulsory misses. Our second category was conflict misses. And sort of our intuition here is that our cache was somehow just not flexible enough about where it stores things. So it had plenty of storage to avoid having a miss, but it still had it because we had some data which had to be kept with some other frequently accessed data, and we ran out of room in that particular place, probably as a set of the cache was overused, and that caused our miss, even though the cache as a whole had room. And we call these conflict misses. Sort of one way we can try to assess if something is a conflict miss is we can think about, would we still have this problem in a fully associative cache? And our third category was capacity misses. So these are things where making our cache more flexible is not going to solve the problem. Basically, our intuition is that we just don't have enough space in the cache. We need a bigger cache to avoid these being misses. We also looked at a bunch of examples of counting misses based on C code, and that's where we're going to start off today. But before I do that, questions about things we covered last time? About trade-offs or our types of misses. Okay, so last time I believe we left off with this exercise. Do that. So I have a 4 kilobyte array and a 2 kilobyte cache. And let's assume the array starts at the beginning of a cache block and all that, so we don't have to make this extra complicated. I want to know how many data cache misses we are going to have. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so observation I can make is I have 1,024 accesses to array. So I probably don't have more than 1,024 misses. So who thinks we have exactly 1,024 misses? Every axis is a miss. Okay. So how about half of 1,024? So 512 misses. Every other axis is a miss. People. A quarter of that. Every fourth axis is a miss. Okay, so we have good number for that. So how about an eighth? So 128 misses, one miss per set. Some other number. And no clue. Okay, so a bunch of people with no clue, otherwise a plurality saying quarter of our axes are misses. That's the number I get. So we have 256 misses of a quarter of our axes are misses. Someone want to tell me how you figured that out? What was your reasoning? Anyone? Yeah. Okay, so you're saying our access pattern is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and so on in the array, and we have four elements in a block, so we're going to fetch a block, and then we're going to access the rest of the block because of our pattern is just sequential. So every fourth is a miss. We'll create a new block. All the other ones, it's the same block as before. We just write it in. It's going to be a hit. So that is indeed one good way of figuring this out. So another way we could figure this out is by looking at the sets of the cache. So it's a 2 kilobyte cache at 16 byte blocks. That means we have 128 sets. Our first set has indexes 0 to 3, let's say. And that's going to be the same set as the thing 2 kilobytes away. Why 2 kilobytes away? If we think of filling up our column of our cache, you know, I need to get 2 kilobytes of stuff before I need to go back to the top. Like if I put the top of the array in the first, in the beginning of the cache and keep going, I'm going to have 2 kilobytes of stuff before I need to go back to the top of our cache. So halfway through the array is in the same set as the beginning of the array. So set 0, if it has elements 0 through 3, it also has 512 through 515. And if we consider only what happens for set 0, well, our accesses for set 0 are going to be 0, 1, 2, and 3. Then there's a bunch of stuff that doesn't matter for set 0. And then we're going to access 512, 513, 514, 515. So we're going to have a miss to bring in 0 through 3. Then we're going to have a couple hits. Then we're going to access 512. We've never accessed that block before. We're going to bring in 512, replacing 0 through 512 through 15, replacing 0 through 3. We're going to have a miss and then 3 hits. And so for the accesses to set 0, I have 2 misses and 6 hits. And I can do the same thing for all the other sets, but I don't actually need to go through every single set. I can just say, well, if I look at set 1, it has the same pattern, just with different numbers. And that's true all the way up to set 127. There's no exceptions. Just the way the sets map to array indices. So I could say each of the 128 sets, we have 2 misses. So 128 times 2, 236 misses. So that'd be another way I could figure this out. And that would have helped me if we had a weirder case, like let's say the array, instead of having 1,000, well, that's not in this case, but you know, we would have some exceptions. It might be more complicated if it didn't exactly work out that our cache was exactly twice as big as the array, but we could like sort of categorize the sets. Now, I think for this example, looking at just saying it's sequential, they're in the same block, that's definitely simpler. But having this other way of analyzing things might help us if this problem got a little more complicated. Like so. Here, I've decided I'm going to compute all of even sum together and all of odd sum together. It's just how many misses do we have? That's our first part. there's a second part after you figure out the first part, which is, you know, could I have done better with a set associative cache? So if I had the same size, a 2 kilobyte cache, but I made it have multiple ways, so I made it have less sets and more ways, would I have a better performance? But first part is just how many misses do we have now? Did we increase it? Do we keep it the same? Here it might be, you might need something a little more sophisticated than saying it's in the same block as just before, unfortunately. Okay, so who would like some more time for just figuring out the number of misses with the direct map cache? Okay, so let's, yeah. So again, we have this, we're doing the same calculation the previous example did, so we still have 1,024 accesses to the array. We're accessing every element once. So who thinks we have, everyone's a miss, 1,024 misses. How about every other one is a miss, so 512 misses. Every fourth is a miss, so 256 misses, just like before. Some other number. Okay, and no clue. Okay, so we have more debate on what's going on here. I think our plurality answer is about half of the accesses are misses, and that's what I get. So someone wanted to run me through their reasoning on how you got half, about half of the accesses are misses. Yeah. Okay, and so you're saying that we have this pattern where it's a miss, then it's in the same block, and it's a hit. So I like that, and this is in fact what happens, but we have something a little tricky here, which is that in our second for loop, we do one, then three, right? And that's the same block we accessed here. So why isn't one a hit? So the question is, this for loop written, so you think it got, must have gotten overwritten somewhere in here, is what your logic is. And I think that is, in fact, what happens in this case. But if we wanted to figure out systematically that that happened, we need a little more work. So one way we could figure it out is we could say the things that map to set 0 are array indexes 0 through 3, and 512 through 515. Why do these both map? Because, well, our cache is half the size of the array. So like, since it's direct map, if we have the beginning of the cache goes to a set, then halfway through goes to the same set. We're just gonna, if we think of how the mapping works, we're gonna store the next part of the array in the next row until we run out of rows, then we're gonna go back to the top. So things that are 2 kilobytes apart end up mapping to the same set. Because we have a 2 kilobyte cache. And that's halfway through the array. And we can think about what's the accesses to set 0. Well, we're going to have an access to 0, 1, 1, 3, and we're also going to have 512, 514 here. And that's going to make sure we get rid of 0 through 3 by the time we access 1 and 3. And you might say, well, wait a moment. In the second loop, don't we access 512 again? That block, yes. So we're going to access 512 and 515, but that's after we access 1 and 3, so that's not going to be a hit, even though we've accessed the block before either. So that's a way we can figure it out, and we can like do that analysis for every set. We see all the sets are very similar in this case, because it happens that our array is exactly twice as big as our cache. If we hypothetically, you know, didn't have the array that big, we would have a different number of, you know, a different portion of our accesses being, misses. So let's say our array was 1,000 elements. In that case, our last set would have only, you know, the middle of the array in it, and would actually have extra hits. So we wouldn't have half of our, we'd have something a little better than half of our accesses being misses, because we'd get a little bit of reuse, because the we didn't have exactly double that size. But it just happens that this is exactly twice as big, so this problem happens for every single sort of block in the array has a pair that's also maps to the same set, so we end up everything, every other access being a miss. Questions on how to figure that out? So we have the second part. Would a set associative cache be better? So who thinks it would be better? Thinks it would be the same? Thinks it would be worse. Okay, so it seems like everyone thinks it would be the same or worse. So mostly the same. So I would say that would a set of associative cache be better? I would say generally, so first of all, would it be worse? So I think it shouldn't be worse because all our hits here are based on accessing the same block twice, in which case, the set of associative cache shouldn't be able to hurt us because it should always have the thing we most recently put in it, which is what we're accessing twice. So I think it's going to be no worse, but it's probably about the same. But it's not actually guaranteed. So there is a way we could come up with a set of associative cache which does better. But we have to do something which probably seems like a bad cache design. And I think for most programs would do be a very bad cache design. Can someone think of that? And I think to make this simple, let's just think of a fully associative cache. So the extreme case, we just have one set. So how could a fully associative cache possibly do better? So what we want to do, so one way we could do better is if we could somehow make our cache have this 1 and 3 in the cache, because we accessed 0 and 2 earlier. Yeah.
So maybe don't write the values 512 up to 1024 and cache at all.
The question is, you're saying don't write the values 512 up to 1024 and cache at all. So unfortunately, we can't do that because we have to keep the most recently thing in cache. But we could do something very close to that. So I could choose a replacement policy, which is I'm going to always replace the thing with the highest address when I have anything, when I don't have free space. And that would keep the lower part of the array in the cache. And as we access the higher part of the array, we bring it in, but we then would replace it as we kept going. Now that's a stupid replacement policy for most programs because it doesn't take advantage of locality at all. It's really bad, in fact. But we could do it, could make a cache which works better, but if we have an LRU policy, replacement policy, then that's not gonna happen, right? The least recently used pattern says that we're gonna keep in that if we think of how least recently used works, once we do the deal with the second half of the array, that's what's going to be in the cache, not the first half. So when we access the first half next, it's not in the cache. So we'd have the same pattern of every other access as us. But we could hypothetically have a fully associative or set associative cache with a non-LRU replacement policy that does better. There's just the question of would that cache be worth having for any real program, given that it's not taking advantage of locality explicitly. So I would say it would be the same if LRU replacement, and maybe better otherwise, but the same if LRU replacement. Questions? That reasoning. Okay, so we have looked at sort of counting misses very precisely. We can do the work to actually figure out how many misses there are. But we want to talk about sort of optimizing programs practically, taking advantage of how our cache works. And doing this sort of counting misses in these very contrived examples where things line up with the cache size very nicely is a lot of work, it's very tedious, and in practice we don't really know what our cache sizes are and so on. So we're going to want to do something a little more approximate and faster. So we're going to have this approximation idea, and we're going to be based on sort of two big things we're going to look for. So one thing we're going to look for is Well, we're mostly going to be looking at things like loops, but we're going to basically look for, do we have good or bad temporal and spatial locality? So if we have good temporal locality, that means we expect to have lots of cache hits. We expect every access that has good that is a repeat, we expect to be a hit. As a quick approximation. Maybe in practice, this wouldn't be 100% true because of there might be some conflicting value that maps to the same set or direct map cache. We're going to ignore that issue for this approximation and just say, if there's good temporal locality, it stays in the cache. And for spatial locality, we're going to say, if it's likely in the same block as something before, that's more likely to be a hit. We'll use that to say, this is usually a hit. If we wanted to do a precise analysis, we need to worry about, what are the other things that map to the same set? Is it going to get evicted? We're going to kind of gloss over that, make a quick approximation that's much more practical. And often we're going to be looking at code with loops, because this is usually where we're concerned about cache performance. When we're looking at loops, we're going to look at the innermost loop, if we have nested loops, because that's probably what matters, and we're going to try to figure out what the access pattern for that is and what it uses. So first, let's talk about figuring out locality. So here I have two pieces of code that, because addition is commutative, compute the same thing. And we have accesses to A, arrays A, B, and C. My question is, which version has better temporal locality for A, B, and C? Which has better spatial locality for A, B, and C? Or they might be about the same. Between the two. So, time to look over that. Oh. And what I would recommend looking at is we can figure out what do the accesses to, for example, A look like. So if we think of version 1, if we think of this loop here, we're accessing A of 0 in the first, when J equals 0, sorry, when I equals 0. What we're doing is we're accessing A of 0 when J is 0, then A of 0 when J is 1, then A of 0 when J is 2, and so on. And then when I is 1, we're accessing A of 1, then A of 1, then A of 1, and so on. And this is the sort of analysis I would do for each of the arrays and cases. Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with A. So A, let's start with A and temporal locality. So who thinks version 1 has better temporal locality for A? Version 2 thinks they're about the same. Okay, so most people say version 1. And I would concur with that. So I showed you for version 1, we have, we're accessing A of 0, then A of 0, then A of 0, n times, and then we move on to A of 1, n times. If we compare that to version 2, what we have is when J equals 0 is our loop, we have I equals 0, we access A of 0, then when I equals 1, we access A of 1, then A of 2, and so on. And that's the pattern we repeat. So we don't have good temporal locality because, you know, yes, we access elements of A twice, but it's a lot of time in between those relative to version 1. Version 1, usually when we access an element of A, we access the same thing again right away. Version 2, we have to wait for that that loop over n things to finish before we access it again. So it's a lot better in version 1. It's not that there's no temporal locality in version 2, just not as good. Okay, so how about spatial locality in A? So who thinks it's better in version 1, better in version 2, about the same? Okay, so this is kind of a tricky thing. So, most of you said it's better in version 2 because looking at access to A of 0 and predicting we're going to access something that's not A of 0 but nearby is very good. On the other hand, if we think of version 2, if I think of defining spatial locality in a way where I say, are we likely to access something close as our next access to A, the answer for version 1 is better for that. And in practice, definitions of spatial locality usually aren't clear enough to precisely say which of these cases is better. I would say the spatial locality in both cases is very good. Very good in both. Sort of, and this depends on the definition. On definition details that we don't really care about in this class. So why would I say it's very good in both? Well, if we're accessing something that's not the same thing, it is always the next thing in both cases. We go from A of 0 to A of 1. In both cases, A of 1 to A of 2. So in both cases, we are taking advantage of things being nearby in memory. It's like blocks are going to be helpful. So I think it's very good in both cases. And I would say it's about the same, but whether this is true or not depends on your details of your definition. Because usually when people are worrying about this, they're not worried about cases where you have tons of temporal locality like this. Okay, so that's A. So how about B? So I'll start with B's temporal locality. Thinks it's better in version 1? Better in version 2? About the same? Okay, so most people say better in version 2. And B kind of has the opposite of A's access pattern. So indeed, it is better in version 2. We're accessing the same element of B over and over. And then for spatial locality, this is also a mirror of A's situation. So I would say it's very good in both. How about C? So let's start with, for C, temporal locality. So he thinks the temporal locality for accesses to the array C is better in version 1, better in version 2, about the same. Okay, so most people said about the same. Anyone want to tell me why is it about the same? What's happening that makes this about the same? Yeah.
You're never accessing the same element over and over again.
Okay. You say, we're never accessing the same element of C twice. And that is, in fact, the case. So this might not be entirely obvious. So the thing to remember is that if we think of I here, I is always less than N. Not I, that matter. That's not what it matters. So if we think of J here, J is always less than N. So we never have, there's no I and J which are different and give us the same index of C. Right? So every single I and J we choose give us a different part of C, so we never actually access any element of C twice. Each one is accessed exactly once, so there's no chance for temporal locality. Remember, temporal locality is accessing the same thing, not something nearby. So this is sort of none in either for temporal locality. Questions on that? So let's do spatial locality for C. So who thinks it's better spatial locality for C in version 1? In version 2, it's about the same. Okay, so we have a split between it's better in version 1 and it's about the same. So to figure this out, let's do our same work of figuring out what the pattern looks like. So for the first version, we access C of 0 when I and J is 0. Then we move on to J equals 1. When J equals 1, we access C of 1. Then C of 2, and so on. And then when I equals 1, eventually we're accessing C of N. C of N plus 1, and so on. That's the pattern we have for version 1. For version 2, we have our first loop, we access C of 0, and then we advance I by 1, so we're going to access C of N, then C of N times 2, then C of N times 3, and so on. And if we think of when, in the second, when J equals 1, we're accessing C of 1, and C of N plus 1, and so on. We're always skipping by N because of how that loop works in that innermost loop. So typically, we're not accessing something very nearby, assuming N is pretty big. So I would say it is better in version 1, the spatial locality. Questions on how I figured out that. Okay, so we have this sort of idea. We can look at some code with loops and figure out, you know, sort of where do we have good temporal and spatial locality in these accesses to arrays, which are typically the things we're most worried about cache performance for, things that look like arrays. And we can do a bit better than that. So temporal spatial locality is useful to compare about. We want to like sort of estimate like performance kind of numerically. So we can kind of use this idea of looking at the locality to estimate misses. So let's assume, for example, I have 4 array elements per block, and N is a very big number. And I want to know how many misses do we have for the accesses to A. And I know here for A, so that I have excellent temporal locality. Locality and good spatial and very good spatial locality too. Why do I have excellent temporal locality? Because in the innermost loop, I'm accessing the same element of A over and over again. Why is that the case? Because J is what changes, it's A of I. I have good spatial locality because if I think of what elements of A I'm accessing, I'm doing 0, then 1, then 2, then 3. As I go through these loops, I'm always going from, you know, to consecutive elements of A. And if we think about how this works, since we're accessing the same element of A over and over again, if I'm going to have misses, you know, they should just be on that first iteration of that innermost loop, right? When I'm accessing a new element of A. It should never be the case that I have a miss, you know, when I'm going from J equals 5 to J equals 6 in our sort of rough estimation, right? So if we think about like a real cache, maybe there's some other stuff going on with like it conflicting with an element of C or something like that. But we're going to do a rough approximation. So we're going to say it's been accessed recently. Hopefully the cache is doing its job and keeping that recently used value of A in the cache. So we're going to say the only case where the cache should have a miss is when we're accessing a new value of A, because you know whenever we access an old value of A, we've all accessed that value very recently. So it should be a hit. And when we're accessing a new element of A that we've never accessed before, often we've accessed elements that are just before it. And a lot of the time, that will be in the same cache block. And a way I can sort of take that into account is I can say, well, if we have four elements per cache block, about 3/4 of the time, it will be the same cache block we already had loaded for all those accesses we just did to the previous element of A. So only a fourth of the time I would expect my access for the first time to an element of A to be a miss. And so I would estimate, therefore, that I have n over 4 misses to A, that every time I run the outermost loop, I might have to load in a new element of A, and that only happens 1/4 of the time because often I'll have loaded it for the previous iteration. And when that happens, I just keep that element of A in the cache. I don't need to load it again because I'm just accessing it over and over again. It should stay in the cache because it's been recently accessed all the time. So I can come up with this quick estimate that I have N over 4 misses for A. So questions on how I came up with that estimate? Okay, so let's do the same thing for B and C. Try to figure out, give a quick estimate of how many misses we should have for B and C. And note that one of the assumptions I'm making here is that N is very big. So to keep things simpler, we're going to assume N is very big, and that means it's big relative to the size of our cache. So the cache shouldn't be able to hold N things in it. So I don't need to worry about So if I'm accessing something, and then I'm accessing n other things, and then accessing that thing again, well, those n other things, probably evicted that thing from the cache, because the cache doesn't hold that much. Who would like some more time? Okay, so I want to volunteer me an answer for B. For the accesses to B. Okay, so one way we can start thinking about this is, well, first we can say, what's the maximum number of S's we could possibly have? Well, how many accesses to B are there? There's n squared. So there's n squared total accesses. Total. And then we should ask the question, well, are any of them going to be able to take advantage of temporal or spatial locality? So if we look at temporal locality, the temporal locality for B is really bad. That once we access an element of B, we have to wait until n other elements of B are accessed before we access it again. And since n is a very large number, and the assumptions we're making, that's going to not, the second time we access the same element of B, it's not going to be a hit because we've run out of space in our cache. We can't store the other n elements of B, and we assume our cache is doing something like least recently used because it takes advantage of a locality. It's assuming we're doing locality. So we're not taking advantage of temporal locality. Now, spatial locality, we can look at our accesses to B and say, well, they're consecutive. We're accessing B of 0, and B of 1, and B of 2, and B of 3. So I can ask, what's the chance that the new element of B I'm accessing is in the same block as something I accessed recently? And that's going to be about, the one we accessed recently is the one just before. So the question is, what's the chance two consecutive elements are in the same block? That's 3/4. Total accesses, sort of, and they're not repeated enough, frequently. But, 3/4 chance in the same block as a recent access. Why 3/4? Because 3/4 of the time, if I choose like two consecutive elements of B, 3/4 of them are in the same block. Just, because our blocks are 4 elements. Another way I can think of it is like 0 and 1 are in the same block. If the block is 0 through 3, recent. So we expect 1/4 of n cubed to be misses. So our misses are going to be all those times where we access a new element of B and it's not in the same block as the one we just accessed. Those are all going to be misses. So that's 1/4 of n cubed. Sorry, n squared. When we don't have any cubes here. And sort of my reasoning is that, 3 out of 4 times, it's going to be the same block as the previous element. 1 out of 4 times, we have to move on to a new 4-element block. Some questions on how I figure that out? So, that this scenario is basically the same one we had here. That's the same scenario as repeating. It's the same reasoning. And the 1/4 just comes from the same sort of thing that happened here, which is that we said, every 4 elements, I go to a new block. And the same thing is happening in our example here because our blocks are still 4 elements long and we're accessing every one. Okay, so how about the accesses to C? Anyone volunteer an answer for about how many misses we have for the accesses to C? N squared over 4, the same thing. And that's what I get. So if we look at the accesses to C, we have bad temporal locality. We never access the same element of C twice. And we have good spatial locality. We're always accessing, not always, but we're almost always accessing things which are right next to each other. Not always, because when we change from j equals n minus 1 to j equals 0, that's not going to happen, but that's relatively uncommon. We're going to gloss over that for this estimate and just say on the innermost loop, which is most of the time, we're accessing something which is the same as the previous, which is, you know, next to the previous thing. Question is, how often is that the same block? So we're going to have a hit from that, and that's going to be, you know, 3/4 of the time. So the other 1/4 of the time, we have a miss. So I get n squared over 4 estimated misses per second. So questions on how I came up with these answers? So we have n over 4 for A, because we only have to worry about misses on the first iteration of that loop. We just look at that pattern. And for B and C, you know, we have to worry about sort of every iteration of the innermost loop, but it only happens 1/4 of the time because we could take advantage of spatial locality. And in this case, that, you know, with four element blocks, that cut our misses by a factor of 4. Okay, so our next topic on sort of cache optimizations, we're going to look at examples of doing things with matrices, so 2D arrays, you might say. I'm not going to write them as 2D arrays. So I'm going to write them as sort of this sort of flat accessing rather than writing the 2D array version. And there's a reason for this. Well, two reasons. So one reason is that in C, it's really hard to have a dynamically sized 2D array. Really hard to do that. Another reason is that since we're talking about how things affect the cache, it's easier to see whether things are close in memory using the sort of flat syntax than the 2D array syntax. Also, I'm going to call, we're going to say AI, J, and I'm going to call the first index rows and say rows are stored together and the other index columns. This is an arbitrary choice I am making, but this is how I'm going to refer to these matrices. I'm going to draw them. So I'm going to say rows are stored together, and our first index is the row number. So if we think of how, you know, storing a 2D array like this sort of maps, let's think of a 5x5 2D array. And let's say we had 4 element cache blocks. And how this might work out in the mapping is that our, let's say our the first cache block of the array, you know, is most of the first row. The second cache block is most of the second row and some of the first row. The third cache block is half of the second row and half of the third row, and so on. And our cache blocks are probably not going to evenly map to rows, but it's generally going to be the case that things in the same row, you know, are in a small subset of the cache blocks. And if you want to take advantage of spatial locality, we better access the rows together. Even though we're not going to have sort of the perfect case of all our rows exactly lining up with our cache blocks. That's likely not to happen if we have, you know, sort of arbitrary sizes, as often if you're solving real problems, you will. But it's going to get pretty close. We're still going to have that spatial locality advantage by doing things with the rows that are stored together. And I guess, so for the rest of today and for next week, we're going to start by looking at one particular problem that is very well studied and for which cache performance is a big deal, and it's sort of in a class of problems where cache performance is a big deal. And it's a good example of what we can do to organize our programs to take advantage of caches, and this is going to be matrix multiply. So the way matrix multiply works is that we have a matrix C, which is our destination, and row I column J of C is computed by summing up for all possible K, row I column K of A times row K column J of B. And we can do that computation with this naive triply nested loop I've shown you here, where I iterate through all the elements of C, you know, so all rows and columns of C, and then go through all k's and sum that value up. So questions on what computation is being done here? Because this is going to be our running example. I don't want people to not know what's going on. Okay. So something notable about this is that this is a problem where we could write this loop in multiple ways. So I can also write this loop like this, write the code like this, and it's going to compute the same number because addition is commutative. And we were just talking about sort of spatial and temporal locality, so we can say these probably have very different performance with our cache. So let's think about that. So we have C, A, and B. Where do we have better temporal and spatial locality for each of them? Version 1 or version 2, where I just doing the same computation, just in a different order. Who would like some more time? Thank you, people. Okay, so let's start with looking at C. So who thinks for C, temporal locality with C? So note that in this version, we in fact do have multiple accesses to the same element of C because we have K. So for different, same I and J and different K, we're accessing the same part of C twice. So who thinks we have better temporal locality in version 1? Better in version 2? No clue. It's about the same in both versions. Okay, so plurality, say, version 1, we have some splits. So again, what I like looking at is inner loop, what does the pattern look like? And we're accessing, so if we think of initially, we're doing C of 0, then when I and J and K are 0, then I and J and K are going to, I and J are going to be 0 and K is going to be 1. We're going to access C of 0. Then when I, J, K, I and J are 0 and K is 2, we're going to access C of 0. And we're actually going to keep accessing C of 0 n times until we go on to accessing C of 1 and so on. That's the pattern we have for version 1. So questions of how I came up with that pattern? For version 2, what the pattern is going to look like, we're going to access C of 0, then C of 1, then C of 2, all the way up to C of n, and then we're going to advance to, or C of n minus 1, I should say, the maximum value of j, and then we're going to do C of n when I is 1 and j is 0. C of n plus 1 and so on. So that's our problem. And I would say, as temporal locality is, are we accessing, if we access something, do we access it again soon? That seems to be very true for version 1 and not very true for version 2. So I'd say version 1 is better in that respect. So questions on how I came up with that? Okay, so let's talk about spatial locality in C. Who thinks it's better in version 1? Better in version 2? About the same? Okay, I would say it's about the same. It's very good in both. Both, it depends exactly how we deal with repeated accesses of the same thing. Okay, so let's go on to A. So we're talking about temporal locality in A. Thinks it's better in version 1. Okay. Better in version 2. About the same in both. And no clue. Okay, so we have more of a split here. So let's look at our accesses to A. So in version 1, what we're doing is we're accessing, first, we're accessing when I is 0 and K is 0, we're accessing A of 0, then A of 1, then A of 2, so on. And then we move on to, this is when I equals J equals K equals 0, and then we move on to J equals 1, so we actually repeat this pattern for a while, and then we eventually advance to I equals 1 and move on to A of n, A of n plus 1, and so on. So that's the pattern for version 1. For version 2, our pattern here is that, well, the inner loop is when we're changing j, right? So when j equals 0 and I equals 0 and k equals 0, we're accessing A of 0. Then j is going to be 1, and we're still accessing A of 0 because I and k haven't changed. So we're going to do that over and over again. And then some of you might have had a complaint. Wait a moment, we're moving on to A of n after we advance that second innermost loop. Then A of n over and over And that's the pattern we're going to have. But as far as temporal locality, we're repeating in version 2. We're not repeating things in version 1 quickly. Yes, we're accessing A of 0 again, but we access N other things first. So it's not. So the temporal locality is much better in version 1, even though it's not that there's no temporal locality. Sorry, version 2 is version 2, the one where we actually repeat things. But it's not that one has no temporal locality. It does have some temporal locality, it's just not very deep relative to version 2. Okay, how about spatial locality? Who thinks it's better in version 1? Better in version 2? Okay, so most people say version 1. So in version, I would say 1, maybe with a question mark, because we do have spatial locality in version 1. On the other hand, in version 2, maybe it's not going to matter so much relative to what version 2 is doing. Yeah, so probably it's better in version 1. Because in version 2, when we go on from A of 0, we move to A of n, so that's not close together. How about, let's move on to B. So who thinks we have better temporal locality for B in version 1? In version 2, it's about the same. So most people say it's about the same. So if we look at our innermost loop, when we change k here, we're changing k in the innermost loop here, so we're accessing different element of b's every time in the innermost loop. And the same thing is true in version 2 with j, we're accessing different elements of b every time. So as far as what the innermost loop is doing, we have no real temporal locality. If we look at the next loop, well, that's really bad in version 1. In version 2, we are accessing the same, we're changing I and not K, so we are having more repeats of elements as far as in version 2. So I think version 2 is marginally better, but it probably doesn't matter, right? Because to really take advantage of temporal locality, they should be more frequent than every n times. So we're accessing something every n times again in version 2, but that's probably not so useful. So 2, but really about the same. The same, which is bad. So I would say bad. But yeah, probably the way I phrase this is both bad, but 2 a little better. Both bad, but 2 slightly better. How about spatial locality? Who thinks it's better in version 1 for B? Better in version 2? Okay, so most people say it's better in version 2. In version 2, we're changing J, so we're accessing consecutive elements, so that I think indeed is better. Okay. So we can do this analysis, and if we look at this, we can say, well, I guess version 2 is better. Maybe, or maybe not. But we can try to come up with a more definitive answer by doing our misestimation. So we can say that for version 1, we said A, we had no real spatial locality and no real temporal locality. Temporal locality, but we had spatial locality for here. So because we have spatial locality, we're going to have every n divided by the number of things that fit in the block. N divided by the number of things that fit in the block is the number of misses we expect over that loop n times, right? If we have 4 things in a block, we expect a quarter of them to be misses. So there's n third accesses to A. So it's n third divided by the block size misses we expect, where the block size is the number of things that fit into a block. For B, for the innermost loop, we have no spatial locality, so we expect each of these to be misses. So we have n misses per this loop, so n third misses in total. Every access to B we expect to be a miss if n is big. And for C, well, we're accessing the same thing over and over again, so we expect at most 1 miss per loop over k, and actually it's going to be better than that because usually it's in the same block as the thing we accessed in the previous loop over j. So we expect 1 divided by, you know, the things that fit into a block, this is per loop over k, or n squared divided by the block size. And if we kind of add these up, we get that we expect about n to the third plus stuff misses. If we do the second version, we say, oh, A, we have that great temporal locality, that's about n squared misses. So each loop over k, we have 1 miss. For B, we have n divided by the block size for the innermost loop, so we have n third divided by the block size. Yeah. And the same for C. So we get a total of about 2 times n squared over the number that fit in a block. Just because we don't have anything with like bad spatial and temporal locality like we did in the first version. Question?
Would it be 2n cubed?
2n cubed? Yes. Sorry, I meant n cubed. Copying the numbers I have here. Yes, 2n cubed. So we have 2n cubed over the block size by n third. So we'd expect the second version to do better. And if we actually run it, it does. So here I have the performance of the two versions. So top I have number of instructions run is the same. So we're just changing the order of the loops. Second, I have the number of cycles it takes, and you can see the version with k as the outermost loop is about twice as fast on my desktop. So that's where I'll leave off today. So next time we'll talk about sort of do it going beyond just changing this loop order idea and taking more advantage of our cache.